Blog Talk Radio.
Texas on Saturday, October the 23rd, and today we're going to catch up with our good friend Frank Burke. Of course, Frank is a businessman and author and a wonderful friend of our show, and we're going to talk a little bit about electric automobiles. Now, this is sort of a good topic today because, and I didn't plan it exactly this way, but it is a good topic today because the gasoline prices in Texas, and we're always a little below the national average. So I don't know what the prices are somewhere else. But our prices right now are $3.09. I just saw the gas station last night, $3.09 for just the basic. I think everybody's around $3.09, not just the discount places, but everybody. So talking about an electric car when gasoline is $3.09 a gallon, you know, maybe a topical topic, as they like to say, for the country today. But of course, there are lots and lots of questions about the electric car and its applicability as a vehicle in the future. And that's why we invited Frank today to give us, as he always does, the good perspective on many of these things. But let me begin by saying hello to Frank. How are you, Frank?
Well, thank you. I think you're much too generous to me, Silvio.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I'm a generous person.
You are. But, it's about, here it's about 304 to about 334.
So we're roughly in the same. Well, maybe you're a little bit more expensive then, but not anything over three is expensive territory for me.
Yes, it is.
It really is. But anyway, I got to ask you, if we're starting to, you know, we're getting not exactly cold, you know, it's dropping. The temperatures are dropping around here. But what's it like in central Wisconsin?
Well, it's cold. We had a freeze, not 28, but it was like forecast to be like 36 last night. Cover the plants or bring them in, that kind of thing. And
wow.
It's going to be that way for probably the next week or so.
Wow.
And
so,
you know, it's going to be in the 50s during the day and anywhere from the 30s to the 40s during the evening.
Wow.
But
it's a lot
different than it was.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, they said Antarctica is going to have a very cold winter. Yeah, that it's going to be really cold down in Antarctica. And I didn't know that it was anything else, Frank. So
I never did either.
Somebody, you know, big weather report that it's going to be very cold down in Antarctica. And I said, well, that's news to me because that's what I always thought it was.
In
Antarctica. I don't remember any summers down in Antarctica, any summer packages to go see the beaches of Antarctica. Not that I recall. Frank, before we get to the electric car, I want to ask you a question that sort of ties into the electric car, but it ties into the fuel prices as well. Because I think a lot of the attraction of the electric car is the idea that you don't have to put gasoline in the electric car. I think that's the big attraction. And people also tell you that it doesn't pollute the atmosphere, and that's another argument. But I think what a lot of people like about it, whether it's the hybrid or the full electric car, is the fact that they don't have to put gasoline or as much gasoline in the car. But I want to go to something that President Biden said the other night, where he said that he really can't do much of anything about gasoline prices. And I don't think that's true. I want to get your opinion on this, because I don't think that's true. I think he, in fact, could do a lot. And perhaps the biggest contrast here between President Biden and President Trump is that President Trump understood the importance of cheap gasoline to the middle class. When you have a middle class family, and that hopefully represents a lot of people, and they put gasoline in their car for $2.20, $2.15 a gallon, and now they're putting it at $3 a gallon, that difference is killing the family budget, but it also increases a lot of other things too, like, you know, food and so on. So do you agree with me that Trump was right, Frank, that you got to keep gasoline prices as far down as you can for the sake of the middle class prosperity, Frank?
Well, I totally agree with that, but I'll even go you one better. Trump, for the first time in history, had made us energy independent to the extent that we don't have to rely on people who don't like us in a lot of cases for fuel. And that was the real significant thing that Donald Trump did, if nothing else. And this fool Biden comes in and destroys the whole infrastructure, you know, with the Keystone Pipeline and forbidding drilling and whatever. And it was ridiculous. It was ridiculous because we had something that was really, really special to us. And then, of course, he went ahead and okayed the Russians doing a pipeline. So the idea that, well, this is for the environment was a lot of bull. It just wasn't. He just did it because he does not like this country and does not want to see these people, our people, have access to cheap fuel.
Yeah. And cheap fuel, Frank, you remember the late 70s when gasoline went up and the terrible impact that had on our economy. If gasoline is expensive, and we're already seeing this, Frank, everything else is expensive because everything is transported by gasoline. Even if you cut the grass, you gotta use gasoline. So when President Biden says he cannot really do anything, you know, that maybe that's true in the sense that he's already reversed that, or he doesn't have the ability to make the changes fast enough or whatever. But he could easily have a positive impact on the price of oil if he would simply reopen the pipeline, let people look for oil in the United States, and let the fracking go on, and just basically get out of the way of the energy movement, Frank.
Yeah, he just has to reverse his bad decisions.
That's all
he has to do, but he will not do that. And, you know, he's let's put it this way, he's a creature of some of the people and other countries who have been, you know, giving him money and giving the family money. And this bears very strongly onto the whole electric car thing.
Yes.
So it's, you know, you're looking at, in those batteries, you have the need for heavy metals. You have the need for rare earth materials. And China has a, you know, you're giving a great gift to China to say, well, we're going to be dependent on you for this.
Wow. Well, let's talk about the electric car, because I think for most people, the electric car is still a little bit like the spaceships that went to space, you know, back in the 60s. We were all so fascinated with the spaceships. And I think that the electric car has some of that romantic attachment to it. You see these electric cars down the road here. There's not as many here, but there's quite a few. And, you know, I had a chance to ride in one, and, like, you don't hear anything. It's just remarkable. Mm-hmm. It's a total silence. And there are a couple types of electric cars. You have what they call the hybrid. You know that. There's a battery in the engine that gives you sometimes 40 or 50 miles. And then you go back and forth between the battery and the gasoline. Those have become very popular. But those are not really electric cars. They have a battery inside, but you still have the gasoline as backup. And then you have the full electric car. And what prompted my invitation is that there was a local car dealer. There's a local car dealer here in the area, Mr. Gilchrist, who owns several car dealers, who wrote an article in a sense saying, yes, I like the electric car, but we got to understand these things, that there are some problems. And we still don't know a lot about electric cars. We know they run on electricity, but there's a lot of questions. So I kind of wanted to start there, Frank, and just give me your impressions of the electric car.
Well, I think before we talk about the car, we have to talk about the infrastructure that it is going to require, because there's no such thing as something for nothing when it comes to energy. And the idea that this is electric, I just plug it in. Okay, but where does the electricity come from? And if you, the thing that's so dangerous is that it seems like all the major companies are going all in on this. It's the idea that this is the only thing we're going to produce. We're going to get away from the gasoline-powered cars. But the problem is we don't have a grid that can support that. We don't have the wherewithal as these batteries wear out to recycle the batteries at this point. And we don't have the service capability for the in terms of, as your dealer friend pointed out, it will cost at least $100,000 per dealer to obtain the equipment that's used to analyze these things and to retrain all the mechanics. So you're looking at something that really, to go in and say, no, this is the only thing we're going to do, and by the way, here we go, is insane. Because you have to, anything like this, you would have to transition over. That's my feeling.
Yeah.
You would have to say, wait a minute. Okay, we're going to aim for like a 20% penetration in 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Then, and we're going to see how that goes. And then we're going to have to go further than that. But what people don't understand, they think, I just have the electricity. Well, that's why they're talking about a mileage tax. And if you have a gas-powered car, you would be paying that in addition to the tax at the pump. But they're saying, wait a minute, if we go with the electric cars, they get away free because they're not buying gas. So we have to tax them on a mileage basis. And, there's no such thing as something for nothing, once again. They're
right.
Going to try and make it either way. But the dangerous thing is to put all your eggs in that basket.
Mm-hmm.
And if something goes wrong, as it will, it always does, a lot of people are going to be left helpless with this thing.
Right.
And I haven't heard, as I say, I haven't heard one word about how we're going to update the grid. And it isn't going to be through wind and solar, believe me.
No, that's right. We had a little taste of that in Texas in February.
Yeah.
Yes. All those solar panels and stuff like that, they didn't work quite as expected, and I think they're having
no.
that problem in Europe as well, where the wind power isn't quite working out. But you make an excellent point, or you bring up one of the good points that this car dealer wrote in his article, and that is that he's going to have to, as a car dealer, he's going to have to basically redo his service shop, and he's
mm-hmm.
going to have to train all his people into now all of a sudden servicing electric cars. And that's going to require a tremendous amount of money, which means a lot of car dealers will probably disappear. I also would like to know, Frank, when we switch to electric cars, what's going to happen to all of these millions of mechanic shops that employ millions of people changing oil and all of that? What's going to happen to those people? Where are they going to get a job?
Exactly. And you're looking at, I just do not think it's realistic to do this. I think if we can get rid of some of the people who are in government now, there'll be a giant step backward, and hopefully we will go back to energy independence. And, yes, there'll be electric cars, but we have to integrate them on a realistic basis. We can't just say in 5-10 years everything is going to be electric, because I don't think that's very that's terribly realistic to do.
Another thing, Frank, too, that is interesting is an electric car. I'm going to use the Tesla as an example.
Mm-hmm.
But
sure.
Even if you go to the Nissan has an electric car. Chevrolet has an electric car. And I understand that Ford is coming out with a Mustang that is electric. But all of them, Frank, are pretty expensive. I mean,
yes.
a a first grade, I mean, a low-level Nissan starts at $35,000, and that's just the basic one. So you can get a lot of gas-powered automobiles, Frank, for less than $35,000, and they're pretty good.
You certainly can, and this is why I think, excuse me, when you look at it, the whole concept of doing this all at once falls apart, and they're having to give giant government subsidies to people who buy electric cars. Well, how long is that going to continue? How practical is that?
Well, there's another question too, Frank, at least here in Texas. I don't know if that's true everywhere else, but, you know, Wisconsin is a pretty big state too. And here in Texas, for example, most people live in what they call the triangle, Dallas, San Antonio, Houston.
Sure.
You know, there's a little triangle here. And that's where most of the population is. But it's a 300-mile ride, let's say, from Dallas to San Antonio or from Dallas to Houston, or the same from San Antonio to Houston. So in order for me to drive do a family trip and go down to Houston to see the, you know, the Kennedy Center or the NASA or whatever down in, you know, take the, you know, a tour of the of NASA and all of that, a very popular attraction down there, I would have to recharge along the way because most cars are not going to go 300 miles. So I would have to, there would have to be charging stations along the way. There would have to be charging stations in most of the hotels where people are staying. I mean, those things just don't happen overnight, Frank.
No, they don't. No, they don't. Not at all. And when you look at that situation, you know, these people who are talking about environmentalism and are pushing on that level, they don't want nuclear power, which is the only realistic clean energy.
Right.
The wind power is just ridiculous. The blades on those fans the propellers are non-recyclable. They're composite. They have to be buried in a landfill. And the things kill all kinds of rare and special, birds and things like that, not to mention the fact that they really do destroy the landscape and have been found in many cases to create a subliminal hum that can have severe health consequences on susceptible people.
Mm-hmm. We do have some of those fans or wind turbines, whatever they're called, but they are mostly in West Texas where there is nobody 100 miles around them. You know, so, I mean, they're kind of like far out, isolated. But, yeah, they do kill a lot of birds. I'm surprised that PETA hasn't protested against it, you know, because they probably do kill a lot of animals, a lot of birds in particular who – you know, not all birds fly very high. A lot of them fly a little
That's
low.
That's correct.
And they get killed by all of this. So I have a couple of topics I want to get into. Let me take a quick break because I want to ask you about the engine itself, meaning the maintenance, the mechanics.
Sure.
If that's the right word, the mechanics of an electric car. And then also how exactly do we build these plants to support all of this. So we're going to get back with our friend Frank Burke. We're talking about the electric car. Interesting topic. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, talking with our good friend Frank Burke. We're talking about the electric car, some of the questions, some of the answers that we may have about this. Frank, one question from the previous segment that I wanted to ask you. You talked about the environment. One of the things that you always hear from the advocates of electric cars is that it's cleaner. But, Frank, when I look at the air in most American cities – you know, where we 99% of us are driving gasoline-powered cars, I see cleaner air. I mean, anybody who remembers L.A. in the mid-70s, and you go to L.A. today, you couldn't see the sky in L.A. in the mid-70s, and now it's perfectly clear. So I don't get this. They want us to drive electric cars to clean the air, but I think our air is pretty clean right now, Frank, unless I'm missing something, Frank.
No, we've come a very long way in that. We have all kinds of ways of, keeping the air clean. And not only that, we have alternative fuels. Probably the cleanest fuel, if you wanted to use it, and a lot of municipalities are using it in buses and municipal vehicles, is compressed natural gas, which takes very little time to fill up the tank, burns absolutely clear with no pollution, and is extremely efficient. But, you know, they don't want that because it's you have to dig it out of the ground. It's a fossil fuel. But we have plenty of it. We have plenty of it. And we don't have a lot of the materials they need for the batteries in the electric cars.
In fact, I think we have some pipelines of natural gas to Mexico that we've used. Okay, so you go out and you buy an electric car. Let's get to the electric car itself. You go out and you buy an electric car and you pay whatever the price is, and it drives beautifully. Most of them do. They're very attractive. They're very elegant. They ride beautifully. And now you drive it for 50 or 60,000 miles, and, you know, like a lot of people may want to do, is trade it in for another car. What the battery that these cars have, do we have any idea of how long they last, Frank?
I think, now, you know, as I say, don't quote me on this, but the word I heard originally was that they would last approximately 7 years before they needed to be replaced.
So what happens, so 7 years, you know, all right, that's a pretty good time. So you take the battery out of your car and you put another one in, I guess. What do they do with this battery?
Well, that's the question, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah, what mountain are we going to hide these things? Or what hole are we going to
build
somewhere?
What are we going to do with the lead? You know, and they're talking about, well, we're going to have new battery technologies. Well, that's okay, but are we going to be independent with them? Or are we going to be depending on China and or Russia for materials that go into them? That is the problem. That is the problem. And, you know, you're looking at a very complex mechanism, and this is not like one battery. It's not like, you know, in your car and my car, you change the battery. This is a whole array of batteries taken out and changed. Mm-hmm. It's not one. It's a load of them. So
the battery is basically the engine, right, in an electric car.
Well, no, the battery is the battery supplies the fuel, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
The engine, now I can't speak for every electric car, but the engine, if you want to call it the engine, the motors at the wheels. The motors are at the wheels. And in an electric truck, I know if you had a four-wheel, you know, tractor trailer, there would be four different actuating devices, four different motors at each wheel, one at each wheel. And the battery would supply electricity to make them run.
Mm. So they want to, you know, the policy is we want to go electric in 20 or 25 years or whatever the timetable is. But like you say, we don't really have the power grid, and it takes a lot more than 5 years to build a power plant, certainly a nuclear plant. So we go 20 or 25 years. Who is going to be able, if all the options you had were electric cars when you went to buy a new car, have they thought through that maybe consumers don't have the money to buy them, Frank?
You know, I don't think they have. I don't think they have, because I really do not. They don't. They seem to be totally deaf to what the public wants in every case. Just take a look at Biden's popularity ratings about everything,
right?
Including, you know, the border, the management of the border. the economy, inflation, go right down the line, energy, and it's all a mess. But they don't, they seem absolutely deaf to want to what means something to the people.
Right. Yeah, if this was a business example, nobody would be buying their product, but they would keep on making it, meaning the Biden administration. They don't seem to have any, they're totally tone deaf to the fact that the country is overwhelmingly rejecting what they're doing. I mean, I've never seen anything like this, you know, not to go off on politics for a second, but I've never seen anything like this where in 9 months of a presidency, the guy is down at 40%, 38% in some polls. I mean, when you're down to 38%, that usually means your family is the only one saying you're doing a good job.
Yes, that's right. And that's the problem. That is the problem. It's very insensitive. And, you know, we're looking at people who just don't care. These are the this is what's happened is we've become a government by the elites who really do not care what happens or what the people say because they have a ticket out of it.
Right.
You know, that Elon Musk is not going to have a windmill farm on his front lawn. Bill Gates is not going to be, his estate is not going to be next to a battery recycling plant.
No.
So you're looking at all of this where there's a, well, we know best because we're so smart and we're so rich, and the heck with anything you people say. And that is dangerous. Go back to 1789 and look at the French Revolution.
Right. That's right. No, you're right about that. There seems to be a disconnect. But I wonder if there's another disconnect, Frank, with the electric car between the people making decisions, or at least right now. I don't think there was under Trump, but I think it is right now. And the disconnect in the sense that what we're seeing here is really a battle between cities and, let's say, suburban areas or rural areas. Because in most of the eastern cities, if you live in Washington, D.C., you probably don't drive to work. You take a train. New York City the same way. Philadelphia probably the same way. Boston probably the same way. But if you live in Dallas, you're very likely to drive to work. So a person in Dallas, for example, who lives in Texas probably drives 15,000 miles a year, commuting and vacations or whatever. Whereas somebody in New York, I'll give you an example, when our son graduated from Texas A&M and he took a job in, our oldest son took a job in New York, he didn't have a car in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So the price of gasoline didn't matter to him. You know, it was just something that he saw on the street corner. But he wasn't buying gasoline. He was taking the train. And so I wonder if there's also that disconnect here between people who don't drive and people who drive. It, you know, all of this electric car stuff sounds a lot more – it sounds wonderful when you're sitting there in an office looking at the map and looking at the theory. But you're not driving that car, Frank.
Well, no, but I'll go you one better than that. These are the same people, Silvio, who take their private jets to climate conferences.
Right. Yeah, the carbon print, they sure bring a lot of it.
Yes, and they, you know, they have the huge SUVs or the limousines. It's not anything that they care about.
Right.
The money
it's
is
It's like
there.
When they asked Senator or former Secretary Kerry, they asked him, you know, why did he take a private plane to go to wherever that conference was? And he said, well, this is the only way I can travel. Well, you mean they don't have a regular flight that you could take?
Of course
take?
They do.
I mean, of course they do. I mean, you know, I understand sometimes they have security concerns, but I don't think a former Secretary of State has to worry about security. It's not quite that serious. But so when tell me about the engine, because I'm fascinated about the maintenance and how exactly an electric car works. I mean, you buy one, you turn it on. What maintenance do you do?
That I really can't answer, Sylvia, never having had an electric car.
But like what
I imagine there would have to be some lubrication at some point.
Right.
okay. on the motors for the wheels. And then there would have to be some, checking out of it. And obviously, the other thing is, like any automobile in this day and age, there would be software considerations. And this is a great problem.
Yeah.
Because, as you know, this is what happened with the shortage of chips and why even this year, all of the major manufacturers were overstocked on inventory because they had this big pileup at the factory, but they didn't have the chips.
Mm-hmm.
So,
in fact, in California, Frank, there was an incident recently where there was a software problem with the Tesla and people couldn't get into the car.
Yes,
because
yes.
it's so computerized that you couldn't get into the car because the computer was down. And
right,
I can just
right.
imagine what that would be like. You're on vacation somewhere at a motel and you're ready to go to the next place and you can't get into the car because the computer is down. Well,
mm-hmm.
that's not any fun, but
no.
that the other thing in California too that I remember reading that many, when the power grids went down, when they had those blackouts, people couldn't drive their electric cars because they couldn't
yeah.
charge them.
Right. Well, and I'll give you, we've been talking about the cars and the infrastructure that's immediately relevant to them. But I will throw one other thing out because it really is an important consideration.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And that is the emergency services, fire. A fire in an electric car is very, very serious. And
wow.
a number of Teslas have gone on fire.
Hmm.
But you are looking at something that requires a totally different method of fighting fire on the part of the local fire departments. So if you're riding through Texas, West Texas, or Wisconsin in your Tesla or your electric car, and suddenly you feel a little warm and it begins to burn, the fire department may or may not have the chemicals necessary to put that out or the training necessary.
Mm.
And as you get on to some of the other components of these cars, because a number of them, for the sake of weight, will be using composites, the jaws of life will do you absolutely no good.
Wow.
You're going to need something else that is much stronger if you can find it, that would enable them to get into that car.
My goodness, my goodness. I hadn't
yeah.
thought about that. And you've also, when we were talking off the air, you mentioned some concerns about doing away with these batteries or the environmental concerns of making the batteries and then disposing of the batteries. I was reading a story that the chemicals that go into the batteries are found in faraway places like Paraguay and Bolivia,
yes.
mountains, where we would have to be depending once again on other people, and we would have to depend on their political systems. And that's
yes.
a scary thing to do, Frank.
It is. It truly is. Yeah. And, for what? For what?
Yeah.
Again, it's like you said, this is a solution to a problem that doesn't exist.
Yes.
The air is clean. You're never going to get it totally clean, but you're not going to get it totally clean with an electric car either.
Right.
Because you've got the what's necessary to make it and use it and recycle what's in it.
Well, the other thing too, Frank, is that I agree with you about nuclear power. I wish we had more of it. In fact, I wish we would commit ourselves as a nation
yes.
to build lots and lots of nuclear plants, but again, that it may be done in some states, but I don't see it coming out of this Congress. But
no.
So what that says to me is that over the next 20 or 25 years, the only realistic energy for these electric cars is going to be plugging it into your house electricity grid, which means
right.
Let's hope that we have enough power grid at the plant to not only heat the house, but charge up the car.
Right,
I mean,
right.
You know, what happens if we don't have enough power grid? Who's going to charge these cars?
Well, of course. And, there's a solution on the nuclear energy thing. And that is, instead of building these giant nuke plants with the, multi-story water towers, build small plants to service specific city areas or specific areas. That way, you have a lot greater control over it. If anything ever did go wrong, it's not going to be Three Mile Island or a major catastrophe. With the knowledge they have today, it would be a much more effective and economical way of doing it.
Yeah. And even Three Mile Island, you know, that terrible incident, wherever that was,
yep.
I think it was New Jersey or wherever it was. I mean, when you look at it, Pennsylvania, when you look at it in hindsight, when you look back at it now, it really wasn't that big of a deal. I mean, I don't even think cattle were killed by whatever came out.
Not.
I mean, so it was clearly blown out of proportion, I think, to destroy the nuclear power movement. And I think the country has been hurt a great deal. So if I hear you correctly, Frank, at some point in time, we're going to run into this reality that we really cannot put out as many electrical cars as we think we can. Because, as I say, we don't have the power grid. People cannot afford them. So, you know, I can see a lot of these electrical cars either sitting at the dealer or, frankly,
yep.
not selling or just not, you know, people saying, no, I don't want to touch that thing because if I have a fire, I'm probably, you know. You might even have cities outlaw electrical cars because they don't have the ability to put out the fire, as you were saying, Frank.
Right. And I think, you know, you'll be looking at something that should have been phased in. I have nothing against them. They have a great future. But phase them in. Don't say, okay, as of now, it's everything. That's foolish. You have to learn as you go. And if you try and do it all at once, you're not going to have that experience.
Yeah. I think what they should have done is that maybe they should have started out with certain segments of the transportation, for example, say we're going to do city buses or something like that and do that first and see how that works. And but I would be very uncomfortable with ambulances running on electrical power. because, I mean, those things cannot afford to stop because they don't have electrical power. Anything else, Frank, that we missed? Any other aspect of the story that we didn't get to that you would like to mention?
Well, just to add one more thing, and that's the fact
yes.
that you mentioned how silent these were. What they're doing now, I know in electrical trucks, about which I wrote an article some time ago, they are having to install a sound device which has a ramp-up sound as you press the accelerator, and, you know, it makes it sound as though there's an operational motor. And the reason is if you don't have that, it's easy for people to, if not fall asleep, not realize where the heck they are and what speed they're going at.
Yeah. Excuse me. That is so obvious, you know, when you think about it. These truck drivers are accustomed to driving down the road and hearing the sound of the road. And all of a sudden, it's like they don't hear anything. It's got to be almost like, you know, Twilight Zone. It's got to be really freaky. So all of a sudden, you're driving.
And if you're not paying.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're thinking about your girlfriend and you've got your foot on the accelerator.
Right.
You may be going, you know, 95 miles an hour in a 50-mile zone.
Do one quick, maybe you don't know the answer to this, but I'm just curious. Do these electrical cars accelerate as well as gas power motors do? I mean, can they go as fast? And
they're saying yes. At this point, they're saying yes, they can do 0 to 60 in whatever. But it's taken a while to get there, and whether it will be possible to stay there, in effect, or whether that's just something that happens every once in a while, you know. But yes, they can accelerate the same way as a gas-powered car can.
Yeah. No, as I said, I mean, they look beautiful. We see many of them on the road here. Maybe not as many as in other places, but there are many that you see. They're beautiful. They ride very well. People seem to be very happy with them. But you know, the question is it a long-term solution? Maybe. is it a short-term solution? Maybe a little bit more complicated. I think to go that quickly, to sit there and say by 2025, 2025 is just 4 years away. I mean, I don't see in 4 years you're going to be driving around Dallas and seeing nothing but electric cars. I just don't see it.
No.
I just don't see
and
that.
The question becomes, is it a total solution or is it a partial solution?
Yes.
And I go with the partial.
Yes, that's right. And when will we have airplanes on running on batteries, electric planes? I wonder when that's going to come. You would think that at some point down the road, I don't know whether they can make batteries enough to fly those things, but you know, maybe someday.
Well,
they
it would be a matter of weight. It would be a matter of weight. But I don't know. I'm sure they'll have some version of it, but I don't think it's going to be the size of a 747.
No, I just hope that if we ever go to war, that our tanks are running on gas.
Yes.
Because I think
I
trust them more. I trust the tanks and the Jeeps running on gas more than electric. Well, Frank, as always, thank you so much for your time. It's a complicated topic. Maybe we'll come back to it at another time. But I agree with you. I think that the ambition here is maybe a little too ambitious, that we need to take our time. And I don't have anything against them. I have nothing against electrical cars.
Yeah.
I just think that, you know, we may be pushing, you know, we may be pushing it faster than it can go.
I agree with you. I agree with you completely.
Yeah.
Or then we should be, yes.
Yeah, I think so. Well, have a great Saturday, Frank. Enjoy yourself. And
you too.
Maybe
and all the
one
best to the
days.
Family and the grandkids.
Yeah, same to you. That's right. Thank you so much. And maybe they'll get to drive electrical cars when they're 20.
At some point, I'm sure they will.
Yes,
well,
that's right.
And God bless, and also to our audience. Okay.
Thank you so much, Frank. Have a wonderful day, and we'll talk to you later.
You bet. Take care.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You so much. Our friend Frank Burke up in Wisconsin talking a little bit about electrical cars. You know, there's a lot of questions about them. I have nothing against them. I want to make sure that's clear. I have nothing against them. I just have a lot of questions, and I don't think we have all the answers yet. But maybe that's just the way it normally goes. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.